We are coming down to the last of the grace series. So if you have something you want to study, you can either see me privately or slip a piece of paper to me or tell Sue. To begin with, what kind of rules might we see in churches, might we see churches imposing on people? When we were in Pittsburgh, there was this church. It wasn't a Church of Christ, but it was a major denomination. Their ad in the newspaper says, "Our women wear dresses and we read nothing but the King James Version. Come worship with us." But they was every time I read that, I said, that's the one place I wouldn't go after reading that. I just wouldn't go there. So stuff that like that.
Many, many, many years ago, my grandmother was poor. Her husband had died years before, and she was by herself and had no income, and back then there wasn't Social Security. But the church still required her to donate regularly.
Oh. So she didn't have money, didn't have income, but the church said, you got to pay us anyway. Ooh. That's a good one. Chuck?
Kind of along the same lines. There are some that are out there, I don't think any of the Church of Christ, that require you to make a commitment on how much you're going to give at the beginning of the year. And they keep track of it. And at the end of the year, if you haven't done it, they bill you.
They bill you?
They bill you.
Ooh. You get it in the mail?
Yeah, you get a statement in the mail, just like a bank statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to name no names, but yeah, we've got them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of these. What version of the Bible do you use? Or which ones are too liberal to use?
Well, Cotton
Patch Version is definitely a version you don't want to use. I got to come down and hear you.
What you use different ones for study Bibles is just kind of outside reference, and what you use all the time may be two different things.
Yes, very much so. Got to have a couple more. Paul.
Many years ago, I went to a church. We commonly refer to them as one cuppers, people who you have to have one cup. I never fully understood that because they had two cups, one for each set of pews.
Yeah. Marvin Phillips, are you familiar with Marvin? He grew up and he said he remembered when we went from one cup to many cups. It was Brother Smith came down with TB. So everybody got their own cup then. One more. You got one, Greg?
I was thinking about the head coverings.
Head coverings. Big time. Big time. Manchester was the recorder of some work done by John Calvin. He was in Geneva from 1541 to 1549. I got it right up there. And these are the things that he said must absolutely happen. You couldn't feast. You couldn't dance. You couldn't sing. You couldn't take pictures. Or statues, or relics, or church bells, or organs, or altar candles, indecent or irreligious songs, staging or attending theatrical plays. Okay, women, these are yours. You can't wear rouge. jewelry, lace, or immodest dress. Neither can speak disrespectfully of your betters. You would be one of our betters. It says up here. Yes, we can't speak, if we're doing Calvin's, we can't speak disrespectfully to our betters, is what he called them. Extravagant entertainment, swearing, gambling, playing cards. Now, some of you are going to get a smile there. Playing cards. Hunting. Yes. You can't go out and kill God's little animals. You can't do it. You got to raise them for that purpose. This is one of my favorite. Naming children after anyone but figures in the Old Testament, or reading immoral or irreligious books. You had to do every one of these things, or you could not go to church. Not to do some, okay. And they're not fooling around. I mean, there were some big junctures here. Being a church, you better be here every time doors are open. If you're not here every time doors are open, you don't get to do anything in the church but sit. So they took attendance. Laws covered such as how many dishes could be served at each meal and the appropriate colors of garment. So, you know, wives might take that and say, I just don't have to cook as much on Sunday because you can't have too many dishes and put all the men on the diet. Remember the part about you had to use the name out of the Old Testament for your kids. A father christened his son Claude. For those of you who don't read the Old Testament, Claude's not there. A name not found in the Old Testament, and when they came down on him, he spent 4 days in jail. Because Claude's not in the Old Testament. Now, the next one's even a little worse. Back then, they didn't have beauticians to sit down and cut hair and that kind of thing. Now, for some of us, that's not a problem. For some of us, that is. But in this day, they didn't have those, so what did the women do? They piled it on the top of their heads. If they did it and it got too high, what Calvin refers to as an immoral act, letting your hair get that too high. They went in front of their magistrates again, and the wife spent 5 days in jail because her hair was too long and on top of her head. The consistory beheaded a child who struck his parents. If a child hit you, they took your head off. His head off, not your head. They found a woman who was not married with child, and they killed her too. Calvin's own stepson and daughter-in-law were executed when they were found in bed with somebody other than their mate. Can you see how many rules? You really had to be on your tiptoes. So this was Calvin of Genea. Now, there's a next one known as the Covenant of Connecticut. It was founded by the followers of Calvin, and they did some stuff that I just can't believe they did. No one shall have fun on the Sabbath day. If it's the Sabbath day, you all get those long faces when you come in here because you can't have any fun on the Sabbath day. not only can't you have fun on the Sabbath day, you can't go out and walk in the garden or anywhere else unless you're walking to a worship service. Then you can get out into the garden and get to the chapel before the worship starts. So on Sunday, you couldn't have any fun, and you couldn't even go out and walk and enjoy the sunshine. Do you know this one was in there? It's the Sabbath. If I kiss Sue, I'm going to jail. If she kisses me on the Sabbath, she's going to jail. Whoever's at fault with those kisses, just, that's it. I'm sorry, I'm not hearing well. Okay, so far so good. Oh, she forced me. When it comes to coming to jail, there's no mutual benefit here. Whichever one's going to jail, I'm the opposite one of. It was. You are exactly right. In New England, they restricted eligible voters to godly people who would testify to a personal experience of salvation. Didn't matter how well you lived and what kind of citizen you were. It mattered if you had a personal experience at the time of your salvation. In Maryland, the Anglican Church took over the government and passed a law requiring citizens to convert from Catholicism before they could take their part in the government. Now, this one makes sense. The Anglican Church came upon Henry VIII. He had so many wives, and the Catholic Church says, you can't do that anymore. And so he withdrew from the Catholic Church and started the Anglican Church. So there was this natural rivalry between them. This is just my favorite. It happened in Pittsburgh. We had a couple. She sold drugs for a living, not drugs, medications. She represented one of major pharmaceutical companies. He was a doctor. They met at the hospital. He was a Republican. She was a Democrat. Now, the reason this came up in my mind is because if you were looking at the last election, a lot of these signs came up that said, vote as God would vote. But it's the way we'd tell who got to church, who did the driving. Because if she drove, it would be on the driver's side with the Democratic colors, and the Republican colors would be on the other side. If he drove, he would have with the Republican colors on, and she would have the passenger, the Democratic. He can't vote twice. I've checked that in. You can't vote twice. But there are groups who say if you don't vote a certain way, you can't be. Okay? It was funny. We'd say, okay, which one of them drove today? And the kids would run out in the parking lot and see which one had driven. Somebody like to read. Thank you, Hank. Who harassed the people?
The Pharisees.
The Pharisees. I'm going to pick on Don because his wife's not here to help him out. You're the Pharisee for the evening. He had so many laws that it was impossible to do anything on the Sabbath. He could go 3/10 of a mile. If he was 3/10 of a mile away from home, tough luck. You stay there until the Sabbath day is over. They looked at people to see what they thought their flaws were. So when a Pharisee came down the street, it wasn't, you know, "Hi, Mr. Pharisee." They were scared to death of him. If you see their dealings with Jesus, you have an idea of how the everyday person lived. The Pharisees would look for something wrong in their lives, and according to them was wrong in their lives, and make a law about it and then tell them they had to keep it. So Jesus looks at that whole situation and says, "We got to do something, guys. We can't have God's people scared to death." Pray then for workers who will go out into the fields where the people are harassed and show them the true God. Okay? Yes, all the time. There's a verse, I want to say John 8, and that's wrong. But there's a verse where people actually believed in Jesus, but they were afraid to admit it because they kicked him out of the synagogue. Yes.
And so they didn't look at what was good that was being done. They only said, "Well, you're not doing it the way we think it ought to be done, therefore he's wrong."
Uh-huh. Okay. Notice the group he is addressing. These are not content Christians. These are not content Jews. They're being harassed, and they're being hurt. Okay? Somebody want to read?
"For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, 'He has a demon.' The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, 'He is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' But wisdom proved right by her actions."
Okay. What's happening?
Couldn't attack what he said, so they had to attack him personally to try and destroy the message that they were trying to preach.
Yeah.
It's personal attack, personal assassination, in order to say, if I assassinate the person, then you don't have to listen to anything they have to say.
Yeah, I got to get John Baptist. John, you can be our John the Baptist tonight.
I'm going to lose my head?
Yes. Not yet. They look at John the Baptist and they said, "He doesn't eat what we eat. He doesn't drink what we drink." You ever seen him out in the desert? He's a wild man. And if there's anybody who's got a demon, it's got to be this John the Baptist fella. Now, why would people say that? Because John the Baptist wouldn't baptize the Pharisees. Call them a brood of vipers. It was a baptism of repentance. Yeah. This, a friend of tax collectors and sinners, that wasn't a compliment. Jesus says, "I come and I eat like you do and I drink like you do. And what you say about me is, here's a friend of tax collectors and sinners."
That's why he said later on, "We played a wedding and you didn't dance, and we played a funeral and you didn't mourn."
Yeah, it was right up here in front of this. So if John the Baptist is doing not eating and not drinking, and they think he's a terrible guy with demon, and Jesus is coming eating and drinking, and they said he's got a track, he is a friend of tax collectors and sinners, how do you win that? How do you ever get a truth on that? Because one's the opposite of the other, and they're both put in the same can of tomatoes. That was an old grandma saying. just popped in my head. Yeah. They're in the second canon, same in command. They don't like Jesus. They don't like John the Baptist. So they shoot them both down. Somebody want to read. What's the problem?
Jesus is eating with people that the Pharisees wouldn't eat with.
Like who?
Like tax collectors.
Yeah. Who's Alpheus?
Matthew.
And is he a tax collector? You bet. And Jesus is spending time not with the Pharisees, but with the people. Okay?
The Pharisees were sure they had the answer.
Yeah, they thought they knew it.
Yeah. And they were listening.
He always reached out to the disenfranchised. He always reached out to the disenfranchised.
He did too. It's me. It's not you. It's me. My ears have been ringing all day. Okay. He's going and he's trying to get the people who are not righteous, at least in their eyes and in the Pharisees' eyes, he's trying to get those folks focused back in on God. Pharisees don't like it at all.
But generally, they were the people that other people just cast aside anyway.
Yeah, they were. They were considered bad, and if you were a good, we'll make Hank be our good follower of the Jewish religion. If you were a good follower of the Jewish religion as a Pharisee, you didn't go around those folks because bad company corrupts good morals. It just isn't good to have that kind of stuff happening.
Well, and tax collectors were considered as turncoats because they were working for the Roman government, and the Roman government had come in and taken over Israel and was ruling over them and collecting taxes from them. So, you know.
They always felt the Messiah would come to take them out and rule the kingdom here that would be against the Roman.
Yeah. They thought there'd be a military leader. And then when Jesus showed up, he just didn't have, he wasn't their idea of a military leader. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Now, how's our Pharisee going to do here? Jesus says, I'm where I want to be. I'm where God would put me. Now, the Pharisees didn't like it very much. But Jesus did.
The point was, when he said, I didn't come for the righteous, they were righteous in their own eyes, not in God's, because they had no mercy. They had no compassion. They were, as you started out, they had a whole bunch of rules. And they had rules that were sub-rules to the rules that were there, and then they had rules the next level down. And they lived according to their rules, and because of that, they were righteous according to themselves.
Very good. Luke 7, this is an old one that we've used before, but I want to use it. I got to turn around, and if my voice goes, okay.
So he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. When a woman had lived a simple life in that town, learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. Two men, owed money to a certain money lender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back. So he canceled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more?
Did it too fast.
Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt canceled. You have judged correctly, Jesus said.
Okay, there's one more.
Then he turned toward the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little. Then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. The other guests began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace.
Okay. See if we can make sense of it. Why did Simon, the Pharisee, invite Jesus? You can write one thing off real quick. They didn't bring him there to honor him. They're testing him to see if he's really going to be a Messiah. So when he goes in, this is not, you are a teacher of a great religion and you're bringing us, this is not that at all. They come in and they watch him. And they set up situations where he can be trapped.
Perjury trap.
He what?
And like a perjury trap.
Sort of like a perjury trap. And so they don't wash his feet, even though people who weren't very honorable, when they went to somebody's house, got their feet washed. It was just a matter of they sat on the floor, and this guy's feet were right up the next guy's nose. So they washed feet when they were going to a honorable banquet. He didn't get that. They gave him a kiss on each cheek. If you watched the French president who came over, they observed this in our day and time, where they kissed each other on the cheek when they came in. That was an honor. Excuse me? Yeah, Europe still has the habit of doing it. So does the Middle East. She put oil on his head. Why is that? Feet? No, it's alabaster jar that she put on the feet.
No, but he said that they didn't put oil on his head.
Oh. The common thing was you put oil. You put it on top of Paul's head because they didn't wash their hair a whole lot. It's not something they had time to do. And that's where odors came up. So you would put olive oil on it. If you've ever smelled a top grade olive oil, it's stinky too. Just a different stink. In my opinion, okay? Yeah, it was medicinal, used for different things. Okay, so, and he didn't even put alabaster jar alabaster jars. This is probably a multi-generational thing that they have kept passed down from mother to daughter, from that daughter when she became a mother to her daughter, and on down. It is worth a year's wages at least. So, yeah. Greg, your hand was up. In Greece today, they do not like to take the body odor away from the body because they think it's part of the crown of being human. So it's still, yeah, in Greece. In this time, when you walk the roads, you're walking the same roads the camels did, the donkeys did, the horses did.
And they wore sandals.
And they wore sandals, but all that got pretty nasty after they've traveled some. Okay? Okay. Oh, that's all right.
I was reminded, Psalm 133, I'll just read the first two verses.
Okay.
Behold how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. It is like the precious oil on the head running down on the beard, and on the beard of Aaron running down on the collar of his robes.
Yeah.
This whole anointing thing was also part of that.
Yeah, very good. I didn't see that one. I didn't know it was there. Thank you. Okay. On occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Mark that. If you underline things, underline that. This is not, it's okay, just I didn't know, so he's setting up a trap. Teacher, he asked, what must they do to inherit life? What is written in the law? He replied, how do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this, and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, they beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he too passed on the other side. So too a Levite, when they came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was, and he saw him. And he took pity on him and went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring oil and wine. And he said to the man, put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any expense you may have. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell in the hands of the robbers? And the expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Okay, there's some explanation that needs to be done real quick. Who was the priest? What kind of position did he hold?
Position of authority over the people.
Yeah, he has a position of authority. And he's probably coming down from Jerusalem because It's downhill. Jerusalem's up here. He's done whatever he's done at the temple for the last month. That means he's taken the sacrifices. He's listened to the people. He's settled arguments. When you went, it was kind of a heavy-duty schedule. Now, the Levite goes. What do you know about the Levites? They worked in the temple. They had to have wood to keep the altar fire going. They took care of any animals that were brought in for sacrifice. So they've had a pretty big thing. But Jesus, when he started out, called him a Samaritan. And then the teacher of the law, instead of saying the Samaritan helped him, said, I guess the one who helped him. Why?
Couldn't bring him to say a Samaritan was better than the Levite and the priest.
It was actually against the Pharisee law to say the word Samaritan. They couldn't walk on Samaritan dirt or have it blown on them. If they went into Samaria, it was considered that you were a turncoat just like they were because they were only half Jewish.
Major prejudice.
Major, major prejudice. So he can't bring himself to say it. He's not going to say it. So he just says the one who helped him. But Jesus then says, go and do likewise. Oh, yeah, I think so too. Yeah, to get them to see that it doesn't matter who's providing the help. If you can provide it, provide it. Okay. Some people wanted me to back up and get this, so we're going to back up and get it. This is where a man is living with his father's wife. She's probably his stepmom. And they're not married. And even the pagans are making fun of it. Because the pagans couldn't even be charged with something like this. So Paul says, that's not good that you're like this. When you're assembled in the name of our Lord, and I am with you in spirit, and the power of the Lord is present, hand this man over to Satan so that the sinful nature may be destroyed and his spirit may be saved on the day of the Lord. Did that work? Did putting the man out of the assembly work? Chuck, were you a Jewish person? You are now. Okay. They got a better review. As they looked at the man, they said, even the pagans wouldn't do what you're doing. So they set him out of what is called the agape feast. What happened in worship was they started it with a meal. It's called the agape meal. It was where they came together, they talked about how their weeks went, and they had a meal together. It ended with the partaking of the Lord's Supper, and they entered worship. And so when he says, don't even eat with him, don't let him come into worship. Not while he's still living with his father's wife.
Well, they were celebrating it, actually, in the context, I assume, of, oh, he must be getting way more grace than anybody else.
Yeah, they're kind of proud of themselves that they're tolerating this. Your boasting's not good. Don't you know that a little yeast works through the whole batch of dough? Get rid of the old yeast, and you make a new batch without yeast, as you really are. For Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us keep the festival, not with the old yeast, but with the yeast of malice and wickedness. not with the old yeast, the yeast of malice and wickedness, but with bread without yeast, the bread of sincerity and truth. And it worked. If you go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 2, he talks about the punishment that was inflicted on the guy. The guy needed to come back. He was missing his fellowship with the church. He was probably Jewish, which is why I needed a Jewish fella. So he becomes a Christian. His dad's Jewish. What was his dad probably going to do? He's not been true to the pledge of Abraham. He's probably going to kick him out. So now he's taken away that one support group. I have written you in my letter not to associate with the sexually immoral people, not meaning the people of this world who are immoral, or the greedy, and swindlers, or idolaters. In that case, you would have to leave this world, but I am now writing you, you must not associate with anyone who calls himself a brother, but is sexually immoral, or greedy, idolater, or a slanderer, or a drunk, or a swindler. With such a man, do not even eat. What business is it of mine to judge those outside the church? Are you not to judge those inside? God will judge those outside. Expel the wicked men from among you. Did it again. Come back here. There are two standards in these verses. See if we caught it. Standard one is the Christian standard. That's why you could look at the man living with his father's wife and saying, you're not living the life that God told you to live. So standard one would be the Christian life. Standard two is the world's life. Those who don't know Jesus. And boy, are they different. Right. Very right. Right on. Now you go with a guy who is not a Christian, he's not going to have the language you had. The things that interest him don't interest you as much. But that's why we're here. I don't tell people I'm a preacher. They will run away from me. I tell them I'm a counselor, and I teach people how to live. But when I was telling them I was a preacher, I actually had people on airplanes ask for a different seat, not next to me, because they run into some preachers who told them they had to live like he had to live. The difference is a difference that God said exists. There is the Christian world, there is the world that doesn't know Christ, and they're not even close in values. Does that make sense to everybody? Yes. Yes, you're exactly right. The wrong way to reach out to the world who is different than us is not to stand here insisting that we have, that they adopt our principles. That won't work. When we were in Pittsburgh, I was with one of our members, and their daughter was giving birth. And the doctor said there had been complications, and you might have to make some decisions. And he looked up at me and said, what am I going to do? I can't answer that for him. But I did tell him, I'll be there, no matter what happens. That's our place in the world. We reach out to the world that don't understand God. And that's why Jesus did what he did. He's always with the wrong kind of people. You don't find a single verse where Jesus had a party with the Pharisees. It's not there. And this worked out for them, but it was a tough time for me. And it's why Paul said, listen, this is what I do for evangelism. To the Jews, I became a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law. So to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I become like one not having the law. Though I'm not free from God's law, I am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak I become weak, to win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. I'm going to have to cut short because the bell rang and we got about 3 minutes. Arkansas, is where he's from. He started a congregation, just a little thing, and it got going pretty well. And a lady came and she says, I'm going to need a lot of help because my sister was shot and murdered. And he says, you come here and you'll get a people who will just hold you up and hold you together. She says, okay. 2 years later, the guy who shot his sister came to the same congregation. And when she saw him, she freaked out. And the preacher went to her house. And they talked about amazing grace. And the latest I heard from her and the preacher was, she sits on a pew with her three children and the two from her sister. And the man who killed her sister sits on the same pew helping her when the kids get out of hand. That's amazing grace. That's just not okay. That is, you're my brother in Christ. And that's why Jesus could go to those who weren't right with God. Because of amazing grace. Questions, comments?
It's kind of like Ananias when he told the Lord, look, I've heard about this guy. What he's really like. You sure you want to go down that road?
Yeah. Scared him to death. All right. Oh. And that's amazing grace. Okay, see y'all next week.